Hi everyone and welcome to Cooking Goals. You're listening to The Cooks. And here we talk to motivated people who are actually doing something, following their passion, how they got to where they are, and their goals for the future. The aim of this podcast is to inspire people to create goals for themselves, to push towards and surpass them. Whether it be small goals like running a 4-minute kilometer or big goals like owning a home, I want this space to be somewhere people can come for inspiration, to listen in on a great conversation, hopefully learn something, and in the process create goals for the future. Today we talk to Joshua Lumley, founder of Prompt, a startup and industry disruptor in the research and development grant space. How are you, Josh?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, good. Another 6 days at home, so that's not bad for now. You know, hopefully get some work done. We've just had our first, not extreme, but measures of lockdown in Queensland for a long time, haven't we?
That's right. We'll probably look back on this recording one day and say, geez, what a time it was.
Yeah, it is, and it's kind of extending to what further than it, kind of what I think a lot of people anticipated to be, you know, in the middle of, or nearly the start of August now, 2021, when this all happened in March last year. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But we're behaving ourselves and we're at our home, which is good. Now, I usually always start the podcast by telling listeners how we met, obviously only 5 minutes ago, but I have been going back and forth with Josh a couple of weeks now, trying to get a nice, period of time that we can have a chat today, which is good, and that might reflect, I guess, the startup world as well, with, you know, balancing lots of different things at once. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so what we'll do, Josh, today, obviously we'll talk about yourself, we'll talk about Prompt, and we'll kind of get the listeners to understand what it's about and what startup is and what grants are and what is really available to them, you know, within this space, because it's a huge opportunity for businesses to grow and continue being a business into the future. So we'll begin today just by talking about yourself, Josh. So, you know, how did this all come about? You know, what's the story with Prompt or PRMT, PMT? The floor is yours.
Yeah, sure. And thanks for that, Nathan. Thanks for the introduction. So I started Prompt just over 18 months ago now. I was a general manager of research and development for a traffic technology company here on the Gold Coast. So we developed smart technology around traffic light, red light camera systems, speed cameras, all the things that, all the fun stuff that people generally don't like to get caught with. So I came from a background of doing that for just over 4 years. And in January last year, that's when I started sort of just on the side doing a few things for some clients that were, I guess, probably took a liking to my skills in the R&D space, and I was able to help them out on the side. So I was slowly able to build that client list up, and then it got to the point where I could come on and do it full time. So that was pretty exciting. And we essentially provide R&D or research and development consulting services and government grants. So we offer a end-to-end process from really the start to finish, right from the idea from the client through the application, submission, supporting documentation, and then making sure that that money's put in their bank account. So it's ready to get used and ready to get reinvested back into their projects.
Yeah, wow. And so to the people who you, I guess you kind of go to now, do they have an understanding of what Prompt is? Is there other people out there who kind of do this thing? Because I understand it's quite a lengthy and quite a hard process for someone to figure their head around if they're going to do it by themselves. And this government or whoever's giving the grant, are they expecting someone, you know, obviously at random to just submit an application, or they understand that companies like Prompt are kind of helping out businesses and companies?
It's a really good question, probably not one that's asked enough. So R&D is considered quite a specialised area. And the reason behind that is it's something that's jointly administered by the Australian Taxation Office, or the ATO, and Oz Industry. So what you've got there is two government departments, heavily science-based department. So what we generally find is business owners, they might be well-versed in the accounting or the taxation side of things, and they generally understand what, you know, how everything works, and they've got quite a good understanding and comprehension of it all. But when it comes to the science and the research and development, you know, where all of a sudden you're getting stuck into hypotheses and sub-hypotheses and, you know, core experimental activities, they often kind of get lost, and it's kind of, you know, one of the issues with the translation of it all. So That's fortunately why companies like myself exist and consultants. So there is quite a few R&D consultants out there. It's something that, you know, once people start learning about it, they realize that it is an area that, you know, you often do need help on. Very rarely do we find someone has actually done the application themselves. And if they have, they've generally got the tap on the shoulder from the ATO or AUSindustry industry and just saying, hey, look, you know, it needs a bit of tidying up here, or you're way off the mark. So yeah, definitely a few of us out there, but it is a highly specialised area.
Yeah, I've had a look at a few of them myself. I was beginning to start do a little bit of a startup myself, and someone said, oh, you know, you could probably get funding for your type of, you know, work that you're going to begin. I was like, all right, well, I had a look into it. I'm like, this is just like so over your head. Like, it's so overwhelming, some of the terminology, and you find yourself, you're dealing directly with the government. You're like, these, you know, these people don't throw the word government around, you know, that, unless they're complaining about politics, but these are the people who, you know, help provide this funds, and if you've got a rubbish application, you're just going to get thrown to the side, you know, so.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing we find is, you know, it's, you're generally getting money, you know, taxpayers' money that's being paid out either through R&D or a government grant. So there's got to be a pretty due diligence process in making sure that it's going to the right business and the right company as well. Someone who, you know, is deserving of that in terms of the right criteria that meets those grant or the R&D guidelines.
And so in terms of your own background, Joshua, so you said you were obviously working with, you know, the traffic department or transport type of R&D. Were you, like, just doing this on the side as a cashier? Like, what's your background? Like, how do you know how to do this? Did you go to Griffith? Like, I think you, in the Griffith article, you know, obviously you've gone to business school and things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, and I know that article alludes to a few things about, you know, trying to find, you know, your spot, I guess, in the career world and where you want to go and trying to figure out what you want to do in your career. For me, I sort of grew up doing a business degree at Griffith. I did a Bachelor of Commerce and a Bachelor of International Business, and my major was in economics. So I think for quite a few years, I thought I'd be either working at the Reserve Bank of Australia down in Sydney, or my dream job was going to be a consultant at one of the big four accounting firms. I did an internship at one of the accounting firms sort of in my last 6 months of uni, and I had my mentor sort of tap me on the shoulder and just say, look, you know, it's, I want you to have a think about this because it's not the be-all and end-all. And really were just very honest with me and said, you know, you're going to be coming into a job where you're essentially, you know, minimum wage, you've got to rent somewhere in Brisbane and be very close to the office. So all your disposable income basically goes to rent. And, you know, you can't really afford a gym membership, so you're not really as fit as what you should be. And all those sorts of things. And that was a big eye-opener for me. You know, you sort of put that, especially growing up at uni, you put that sort of a job on a pedestal. And it's sometimes not always the case. So the advice I was given was, look, just go out there and explore a little bit and see what else is out there before you come, you know, to do something like this. So I had the opportunity of doing that, and I'm consulting for a company the last 6 months of my university, and in which they're an e-commerce company local here on the Gold Coast that we're really struggling to get up and running. And yeah, essentially we came in and, you know, I very much did a self-taught thing, came in and worked out how to do that from an early stage. We were fortunate enough that it was in the very, very early stages of Facebook advertising. So I think we were probably one of the, you know, very few companies, especially in e-commerce back then, you know, this is 2010, where we were, yeah, putting in, money online and trying to convert that into a sale, which, you know, I know right now it sounds, oh, that's the norm. But, you know, back then sort of, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, that wasn't really the case. Yeah, so I guess from going from that and then working in software for a little bit, and then I eventually joined the traffic technology company. So I started off as a junior project manager, then became a standard project manager, and then we often had a lot of R&D projects running along. So what the decision was made internally was that I would become the general manager of R&D and manage that process for the company, and that's where I learned it all from. So I guess that probably combined with my Griffith degree.
Yeah, wow. And so what a change in times is when you look back on that journey, you know, 10 years ago where all you saw on Facebook was some dumb status or a picture of someone at a party,
and now all you see is just, you know, businesses trying to get your attention and selling and, you know, not just, even just more than that, it's like how people connect these days.
It's exactly right. And the one thing I look back on now and, you know, say the cost per sale that we used to get then when we were the only ones, you know, really on the platform and a few others versus now, you know, I know when people say they have really good, you know, cost per click rates or whatever it might be in e-commerce. And I look back to what we used to get, you know, back in the day, you're talking like cents in the dollar versus now, you know, you're talking like $10, $2 a click, like depending on the industry. So it's changed a lot.
Yeah. And do you find yourself missing that area, or are you kind of still do the same type of activities now, or is it completely different left of field?
It's interesting now because I've obviously got an array of clients that fit all different categories, and some of them in e-commerce and software. I think I've always definitely had a soft spot for e-com. It's something I'll always, I think, sort of gravitate back to, or I gravitate towards those clients in terms of either helping out in other ways that I can. I think I just like the transparency of it. It's, you know, you've taken the development of a product, you turned it into a really good marketing campaign, and you put that online and targeting your audience, and it converts into a sale. Like, I just think it's almost the epitome of, you know, what a business should look like and how it should operate. So I do love those industries.
That's great to hear that you still, you know, have that, I guess, you know, enthusiasm and passion towards something that, you know, that you once did. A lot of people will just drop it off and go, that was me in the past, I now do this, where it's like, you know, you can actually probably build on the skills that you had or learn from something you had back then and manipulate it to help you now, which sounds like what you're doing, which is great. So the way Prompt is described in that article is, you know, it helps businesses turn their dreams into reality. So can you describe that process of what, you know, what that means for the business as well as what it means for Prompt when you go through that process?
Yeah, sure. And it's a pretty, I guess it's probably a pretty ambiguous quote there, you know, turning dreams into reality. I think really when you break it down, what that means is, you know, the people that come to us are, you know, I almost call them like they're the inventors, or they're the guys with the really good ideas, or they've come up with something that nobody else is working on. They often, you know, rightly so, want to keep it pretty close to their chest. You know, it's not something they want to like, share with a lot of people. So there's a lot of trust in probably the early days of engagement with us, with clients. And when we work with these clients, often it is just a dream, or it's a vision, because it's at that early stages of the R&D stage. And what we aim to do is, you know, really evaluate that process and see where they're at, and then looking at where we can help out along the way.
Yeah, it's a daunting thing, I say, going from, you know, having this, you think you've got the golden, you know, the golden bullet or the idea, be like, all right, I can change the world, I can disrupt my market, like, who can I tell and trust, you know, like, that's the heart, like, you got your mates at the pub, you share a beer with them, you go, oh, I've got this idea, and they go, oh, that's cool, and then, but like, your mates can't help you do anything about it, you know, they can give you great support and, you know, a smile and a pat on the back, but what's that going to translate into, and that's, I guess, where you guys come into, like, yeah. All right, well, if you don't have a lot of dollars and you work at Big W, but you have this great idea called Facebook, you know, we can help you realise that without your own money, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's great you mentioned, you know, the talking to mates and, you know, like your family and your own circles about it. Some people think that that's a great thing to do, and it is. But often in our experience, they're not the people that will tell you the honest feedback that sometimes you don't want to hear, but you need to hear, you know, whether it's a, you know, maybe it's an idea that's already done, or, you know, it's got a lot of challenges ahead of it. It's not necessarily saying it shouldn't happen. It's just, I think making an honest, you know, opinion about what that person might be in for, as opposed to just saying, oh, you know, great job, keep going. Sometimes you need to have those tough conversations.
Yeah, I think I've just had a revelation now, because I reflect on me having some ideas talking to my dad, and he would just come with all the curveballs, like, how are you going to make money? What's it going to do? Where are you going to get this from? And it's like, ah, oh, can't you just say, good work, son, you know? But
yeah.
I'm realising now, you know, in this conversation, saying, well, you know, you've got to put food on the table, you got to pay rent, like, how are you going to, is this viable, really? It's like, and I guess that's that process that you go through with your screening applications and,
yeah.
Being that, you know, that tough uncle who goes, nah, right, it's not right now, or you have a low chance of getting this grant because of this, or that's
absolutely great. And I guess conversely to that, you know, even sometimes I get worried when people say it's a really good idea. I sometimes prefer it when someone tells me, no, that's, you know, that's a really bad idea, or no, that'll never work, or it's, you know, the industry's just not like that, because it makes me realise, okay, well, we might be onto something big here, because, you know, no one else is thinking about it.
Yeah, that really disruptive mindset, which is really cool, and, you know,
yeah.
It's kind of a buzzword that people use, isn't it? It's like, you know, I can't remember who I was listening to Mark Burris about something, and it was like, well, this, if you disrupt an industry, like obviously when you flip it on its head and you go, well, this is how we do it, and then everyone just
yep.
jumps on board, you know? So, like subscription services now are the most common thing ever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before it was like, oh, I'm paying X amount a month and I don't even know if I'm going to use it. Whereas people yep. will just fling their subscription at anything now, so.
That's so true, yes.
So we'll move into, I kind of guess, the nuts and the bolts. So, you know, what's a research and development tax incentive? You know, and, you know, is that separate to a government grant? Are they the same? We'll kind of go into, I guess, what those are just for the listeners, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure. So I'll give a bit of a broad summary of both and how they sort of related and interrelated.
Yeah.
So essentially, we'll start with R&D. So research and development is something that's administered by, like I mentioned before, the ATO and Oz Industry, and it's called the Research Development Tax Incentive. So what that is essentially it's a government incentive where governments get paid as a reimbursement of expenses they've incurred for a financial year. Where they've been working on a certain R&D project. So it's not something they can generally apply for until the 1st of July, and it's generally up until the 30th of April each year. So you've got 10 months to apply for it. How it works is you generally need to be working on something. Most of the time, it's almost always product-based. So having a tangible physical product or a tangible physical method of doing something that you're you know, fundamentally changing or doing that's new. And firstly, being able to prove, one, that it's eligible, and there is quite an exhaustive list of eligibility criteria. The main things are making sure that it's something new and innovative that no one is doing currently, and that there's no public knowledge of anyone doing this. And that's not just in Australia, but that's anywhere in the world. So sometimes that can be difficult to prove. However, it also comes down to how specific, I guess, the new development is. So sometimes it could just be taking something that already exists and then, you know, almost advancing it or taking it to the next level and advancing upon that original idea. So that's essentially R&D, and that's how that would work. So it's at the end of the year, the amount that would be applied to it currently at the current financial year of 2021 for companies with a turnover of under $20 million, for example, because it's nice and easy, if they had a $100,000 R&D claim of expenses, currently it's a 44.5% cash refund or a tax offset, depending on the tax position of the company. So, you know, for argument's sake, they could potentially be eligible for $44,500 as a cash rebate. Mm. How that differs from a government grant? Government grants are released specific to certain projects that the government puts out there that they want to invest in different industries and different areas of the economy. So they'll release a certain amount of guidelines and they'll allocate a pool of funding towards that grant. And it's purely it's really a competition based assessment process. So people will apply to then get that money up front. And there's generally a process of, you know, releasing milestone payments throughout the grant period. And you've got pretty strict deadlines on adhering to and spending that money in the right way as well. So where we help out in both of those areas is from an R&D perspective, we have a bit of a unique model where we help our clients manage that on a monthly basis. It just gives them a bit more indication of, you know, the forecasting R&D on a monthly basis. And then when it comes to government grants, we help out right from the very start of getting the applications in, looking at, you know, opportunities to maximise the chances of success, and then managing the actual grant for them during that process. It's one thing to get the grant, but to manage the documentation with it and reporting is sometimes a challenge for other businesses as well. So we help out with that along the way.
Yeah, that's amazing. There's so much opportunity out there for, you know, people, I guess, I get under, you know, under that, when you say under 20 million, not, you know, there's a lot of small businesses who would be under that, you know, threshold.
Yep.
Of, and if they are trying to do something new or to help others or, you know, innovation, it's a lot of hours that goes into that type of thing, to sit down and think about it and understand it. And if you're going to use that with inside work hours, you know, that's a, like you say, one, you know, say $100,000, you know, that's two people's or one person's, you know, very expensive salary to try and, like my work, my mate works in PCR machines, which is like all the stuff that spin the COVID, your blood in the COVID to understand.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not super all over it, but basically it spins your blood and gives you the result, right? So he's a very small startup, but they've gone way up in, you know, value and importance. And so his company, he works in R&D, and it's like, all right, well, we're important right now because we need this type of thing, you know? And so those, it's good for that, those type of companies who are needed to have, I guess, the availability to apply for these things when it's needed. And that, I would say, you know, people like that would have a strong argument to say, I need this money now to help, you know, wider society or whatever. So is it usually for, like obviously you said innovation and you said, you know, doing something new, like say something like I'm a dietitian. So say if I was a dietitian and I had a company and I had employees, it's not really for that type of, I guess, service, is it?
That's a good question. Yeah. I guess if you found, for example, you were working on something, unique and bespoke in that dietitian industry, I'm just trying to think for argument's sake what it might be.
Let's just say like a new diabetes treatment. Let's just say that.
Yeah. For example, like medical treatments are a huge part of R&D. So it would just be trying to define that. And it really comes down to, you know, sitting down and probably breaking it all down a little bit further. I think the main thing that we find with R&D is it's generally applicable to those companies that, you know, either have that idea and that they've started on something and they've started something new and different, where with the government grant side of things, they're more meant, and this is just the pattern we see, we generally find that they're targeting more companies that have, you know, already developed the idea and they've got a prototype. They're ready to go to market. That's where ideally they fit into the perfect category, often, but a lot of the time with government grant, after going through that R&D process. So it is almost like I've noticed in the last 12 months, certainly a trend in, you know, people that have started at, you know, R&D is kind of like the starting point, and it's then working towards that. And then once you've got that prototype or that finished product, and it's right, we're ready to go to market, there's all these sorts of grants out there that can really facilitate and help with that. Both on a state and federal government level as well.
And is it possible to say, like, go through the process at multiple times, or do you get like you've got your scholarship type of thing, you're not allowed to apply anymore, wait for the next round?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You can. R&D is often it can be an ongoing process. I think what you'd like to see is, you know, generally after at least 3 or 4 years, some sort of advancement or development. Or you generally find once people start an R&D project, they never really quite finish because they end up going down other tangents or in other areas and it's, you know, spin balls off into other projects. So I guess it's probably just an involvement of that original project and then going into, you know, evolving into something else. Which I think from an ATO and an Oz Industries point of view, it's probably something they like to see, in that, you know, people genuinely innovating and creating new products and evolving in that as well.
Is that under 20 million cap that you gave as an example more to show that, like, if you're earning more than this, you should be able to fund this yourself, you don't need us type of thing?
Yeah, it's a good point. I guess it's probably just something that they've established as, so to give an argument's sake, then that next tier where you're over 20 million, you don't get it as a cash refund. It's actually the tax offset. So it's basically implying then that obviously if you've got that 20 mil a year revenue, that you're going to be paying a significant amount of tax. So the R&D is then applied to that, and it's at a reduced rate as well. And that changes sort of every year, and this year it's changed as well. So it's not like an exact figure. It sort of depends on a few different factors with the company.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting. And so I've noticed that some are like quite specific to certain projects. Like I was involved, the project that I was talking about was more like environmental waste management. And I spoke to the lady and said, well, hey, I've got this idea. What do you reckon? And she goes, oh, well, the latest grinder's out to help koalas, you know, repopulate. Is that... And so I'm like, well, that's completely not aligned with my project. She's like, all right, we'll try again then whenever. And it was kind of like they brought it out. It's that Queensland thing. They brought it out, and it was like, this is the topic area. If you're in this area, apply. Is that
yep.
a certain type?
Yeah, that. Yeah. It sounds about right, and you'll often see that there's also a lot of grants based on, you know, even just past events that have occurred. So, like, for argument's sake, you know, there was a few grants that came out for, you know, floods and drought relief and, you know, prevention of that, like not just, you know, restoration of all those natural disasters we went through, but, you know, people creating ideas or having products that genuinely help to avoid that in the future. You know, having... you know, I guess being not so defensive, but being, you know, more offensive in that in the future, so that we're not going to have the sort of disaster we had in the last few years with these bushfires and floods and, you know, even up here in Queensland, cyclones. So you will find there's event-based grants. You know, there was just recently a 5G innovation grant that was come out. So the whole thing behind that is the government's really trying to push out, you know, awareness of 5G and its benefits as it's rolled out across the country. So it's put in, I'm trying to think how much money, I think it was $50 million, don't quote me on that, to, you know, for projects that really try and encourage, you know, the use of 5G and almost like a use case for it as well.
Yeah, and so I guess the person who sits behind this and says, all right, let's allocate $50 million to that, you know, who is that? Is that like, do they must go through a huge R&D process themselves to understand what the country and what people need at the time or what's not innovative, you know, like they're not going to go throw in, let's throw $100 million at a social media platform because it's not needed. Mm-hmm. Like we've already got a million of those. So is there someone deciding where the funds go and how much these funds are worth?
Yeah, I think a lot of it stems back from the federal budget each year. And then they, you know, allocation to certain departments. And then I guess within those certain departments, then it, you know, trickles down into different projects that might be of priority. So like for argument's sake, let's say, you know, floods and bushfires are up there as a top one priority, then they might try and then, okay, strategically work out how they can best get that out into the community or into the business community at least, you know, via the form of the grant.
And do you think that the relationship between, I guess, these departments as well as, I guess, entrepreneurs and founders, is it a good relationship or that, because I guess people in politics may not necessarily be, obviously Malcolm Turnbull was very entrepreneurial and stuff and he was Prime Minister, but that's a rare case where, like, they're very politician and I guess, government-focused, where there's business people who are more profit and ideas, and is there a good collaboration there or not really?
I think it's gotten better in the last 5 years, definitely. I would, you know, argue to say it's probably the best at what it's been in my experience. You know, even here in Queensland, we've got a chief entrepreneur. The collaboration between co-working spaces and industry, I think, has really improved. I think sometimes what you find is with these grants or with these often these incentives is they might target, you know, quite specific areas. This funding for manufacturing in Australia, but the criteria and what was defined as manufacturing was quite specific, and we had a lot of people that, you know, were left out because of that. When, you know, arguably they have a manufacturing process, but they didn't quite fit into the criteria of what the government had there. So unfortunately, they missed out. And as you know, hard as they tried, there was no sort of getting around that. So I think it could always be improved, but that's probably me sitting here biased, being on the entrepreneur side and not the government side.
Gee, I just thought then it must be a lot of paper to read, like some of these documents. Just
it is a lot of reading.
Yeah, it just must be huge and not necessarily skim reading either, making sure that you've, you know, read the dotted the I's and crossed your T's type of reading.
Yeah, I think one, you know, grant guideline could be anywhere between 45 to 90 pages, you know, depending on the size of the grant.
Mm. And so there is something that I did not, I guess, quite understand was that, like, you've managed R&D budgets over $17.2 million, resulting in combined direct cash refund of $7.5 million. So what does that terminology mean, just for the listener, as well as obviously myself as well?
Yeah, so it's probably a figure that now needs to be updated. So I guess one thing I probably can't do is go out there saying, hey, this is the average of a client's refund that we get due to confidentiality reasons. But that was more, you know, I guess in my years of doing R&D, that's, I guess, probably the combined amount that we've worked on in the past. The 17.2 million figure, that's generally the largest R&D budget we've worked with. So it sort of just shows the scope, you know, to where, like, for argument's sake, we've got clients with only a $50,000 R&D budget. And there's obviously definitely more work that goes into a budget of, you know, 17.5 million almost. But in saying that, there's also quite a bit of work to be able to put in an application for, you know, just a $50,000 budget in itself. It still requires quite a due diligence process and confirmation of eligibility and all the documentation to put together to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to, like, because I'm in academia now, like, and all people talk about is, oh, I'm applying for this grant, or I'm writing my grant applications, or I'm glad that headache's over, I sent it off, or, you know, like, it's definitely out there for people who have these ideas and stuff. And so I guess regardless if it's 50,000 or 50 million, it's still a hard and very technical process to get correct, actually, because one person, you know, or multiple may get it. I'm not sure how it works, but to get across the line, you know.
Well, generally what we find as well, you know, and arguably a business owner or someone within the business can definitely write the grant. I wouldn't be disputing that at all. What we find is often the grant submissions, either they've done a draft or they actually have submitted something, we find it's, you know, being the business owner, they're so focused on the product and, you know, oh, my product does this and it's amazing and where am I, and which is great, and it just shows how passionate they are. The issue is the person on the other end of that who's assessing you, that grant assessor, they've got basically a checklist there that they need you to hit, and it's working around that and trying to work, you know, the questions and your answers around those so that you, you know, say it was a score out of 10 for that criteria, that you're getting, you know, a 10 or as close as that 10 as possible. Mm. And often people talk about their product and their business, but they don't address those assessment criterias, and then give examples of, you know, their products through the process. So that's often where we come in from, you know, having that unbiased view of their product or their business, and really being able to maximise their chances for them.
Yeah, using the correct language and trying to, I guess, like you said, you know the process better than they would, regardless if they have how well they know their product. Prompt as itself has had its own product, which is providing this service to, like, to help make their product shine, which is really cool.
Correct, yeah.
And so is it, like, you're 6 years into this now, is that right? 6 to 8 years into Prompt?
No. So Prompt itself, we've only really been going for just under 2 years.
Yeah.
But I've been in the R&D industry for, yeah, probably five, almost 5.5 years now.
And so what's the current goal at the moment, or where can you see yourself taking Prompt, or what's the trajectory?
It's funny. I originally just, I didn't want to have any staff members, and my vision was this, was just having enough clients that, you know, I could have the odd Friday off, and yeah, just work for myself and work out of a little office. I think naturally what I've realized is I'm generally a bit of a team player, and I like having other people around me to challenge me and to learn from, and also to teach them and mentor as well. So I probably miss that bit from coming from, you know, in larger teams in the past. So definitely we're looking at the moment of expanding, hopefully quite quickly in the next few months. So we've just committed to a bigger office space, you know, going to be setting that up and hiring some staff in the next sort of 2 to 3 months, which will be exciting in itself. So I think where we want to take it, you know, I'd love to build up a team of, you know, quite a large team in doing this. I guess our goal is just to get out to as many, you know, Australian startups and businesses as possible, and just helping them, you know, gain access to this and taking the headache out of it all. You know, at the end of the day, we try and break it down and make the process as simple as possible, and get them the best outcome. And if we can do that for a lot of Australian companies, then, yeah, that's pretty good feeling. It's a great feeling when you make those phone calls to someone and you've told them that they've just been awarded, you know, $100,000 grant, or you know, it really validates their idea, and you just see the confidence and the money they reinvest and put back into that. You know, they then go out there and you know, upgrade their equipment, or they hire those staff members, and it's great to see that go from, you know, start to end, and being, you know, happy to be a part of that as well.
Yeah, I can definitely your enthusiasm, like, I can see the smile on your face when you're talking about that process of, you know, like, you've helped people and that goes back to what we're saying at the start, you know, realize their dreams are like, cool, you know, this is people, the people that I've applied to with the money said, yeah, we trust you, we think this is great, here's the money, you know, like that must be great validation for your customers to say, great, this is not what all those people at the pub told me, this is actually something that can do something, and they spend all their heart and time on it, you know, why not get them what they need, which is, you know,
exactly right.
And it's going minimal from, you know, like, you know, lots of small businesses with great ideas to, especially in Australia where the startup scene is not super popular or it's not very, you know, well known, like in the industry is a bit small compared to something like, you know, Silicon Valley or the US or India, where it's like, it's on the tip of everyone's tongue. Whereas here it's like, it's very property based or potentially stock market compared to business investment.
And I think that's changing. You know, I think one thing the pandemic has given us is it's given an insight to the fact that Australia is a great place to live and work. You know, we might not have as big a cities as those overseas, but like you take the Gold Coast, for example, where we're based, and, you know, even when you're in lockdown and, you know, it's I guess it's probably not as bad as what some of the people in Sydney and Melbourne have gone through, but it's a great place to live and work. And, you know, that was one of my reasons and one of my whys, if you like, for wanting to do this was, you know, just being, you know, where I wanted to live as well. And we're starting to see that change a bit now. I think it'll be interesting, you know, once this pandemic's over and things return to a little bit more of normality, if there is that influx of people, because they go, geez, well, you know, Australia, New Zealand, places like this are great to but I think we are changing from, you know, slowly but surely. When you look at it from an R&D perspective, Australia is generally very good at R&D, but when it comes to commercialising it and, you know, generating revenue from those ideas, we've actually always lacked that and been quite poor. And it's then taken by someone in the US who, you know, has offered to buy us out or to acquire the company. Like you take like adventures like Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, for example, that, you know, started here in Australia and that were taken overseas, ready to commercialise, and look at them now. You know, I noted today just they announced Square is looking to acquire Afterpay. So that's another example of, you know, another great Australian invention that's been acquired by an overseas company.
Mm. They kind of forget about us at the bottom here, don't they? They're like, oh, who's that in the bottom right-hand corner just, you know, chilling at the beach, swimming with the sharks, whereas we're not, we've got a definitely got a few smart minds here in Australia. Not a few, I'd say more than a few, you know. And internationally, people look at us and go, oh, it's cool that they're doing that. And then all of a sudden, you know, boom, we're all over the world. So it's really cool to see. And also to hear from yourself that you have that belief that we're going to kind of go in that direction, you know. Like, we've got plenty of room to grow in this area, because I think we're going to run out of land to put houses on, so we have to find something else to invest in.
Very true.
Now, just I guess, what's the coolest thing you've seen maybe come across your desk so far, or what's been developed? Do you think that, if, you know, only if you can share, if you can't, that's fine. In terms of like a product or a service that is innovative, or even something you've heard of, you know, as well.
Yeah, probably the coolest one, and I probably can't go into too much detail, but I can give a summary of it. One of the coolest ones that, you know, I still get excited about is the indoor vertical farming concept. So we have a client in that space. So it's essentially taking, you know, I guess a traditional farming process and using an automated system inside a warehouse. So what they're able to achieve there in terms of their efficiencies, you know, you've essentially got a system that's running 24/7, you know, growing, I guess, whatever you like in whatever conditions you'd like it to. So that's probably been one of the most innovative ones. We've recently just had another client who has come on board who is he's doing some interesting stuff in the firefighting it's in the area of firefighting. So basically his product or solution is aiming to replace helicopters and, you know, water fighting jets in bushfires, which he was showing me the stats the other day of some of these wildfires and the death rates we've had here in Australia. So that's an example of a client who's the classic, you know, engineer or inventor who has all these ideas and has combined it with his passion for the environment and, you know, passion for what he saw, you know, Australia go through in the last few years with all these bushfires. So, you know, every time we get on the phone, it's a scheduled hour talk, and it always goes over to sort of 2 hours. And, yeah, I think, you know, we love hearing that passion. Like, they're sort of the ideal clients to be working with as well.
Yeah, I love both those ideas. It's so cool, and especially the vertical farming thing. Like, we won't go too much more into it, but I just think it's such my uncle told me about it years and years ago from a book that he read, and I was like, oh, that sounds so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, it just...
Yeah.
Even just seeing it in person, just seeing, you know, like the fences and the vines going up and, you know, the roots coming out and how it all gets watered and, oh, it's just like, it's kind of like, why not? More so than like, oh, why are they doing that? It's just like, we just need to move. Like, I'd love to build one in the bloody backyard here. Like, just...
Yeah, exactly right, yeah. A couple
of books on it. Like, it just looks so cool.
Yeah.
Now, more about your services. So, you know, what happens in that, I guess, you know, as we've said today, you know, it's a very long process, and, you know, grants, you have an X amount of time to get them in, or as well as R&D, you've got, if you're allocating, you know, more so you probably have a Gantt chart of when we want to have our understanding of the topic completed by. So what happens in that 3 to 6 period of, you know, auditing a company, you know, like, what are you looking for in that process?
Yeah, so I guess what we try and identify probably at the start is the opportunities that we see and what, you know, generally what a client's been working on when they've come on board. So we'll look to see, okay, if we're not starting something right now, what have you been doing previously that we firstly go back and have a look, see if there's any opportunities there to claim. If not, and they're just, you know, starting out an idea, it's, you know, trying to give them some of the tools to use to document that and retain all that sort of moving forward. From there, we'll generally... we'll assess, I guess, the, you know, I call them the project champions. You look for the staff members in the organisation who are able to give you the information as quickly as you can. It's often not the CEOs or the CFOs, despite them sort of being the ones that come to us first. You find that person or that, you know, that engineer that's can go through all the technical details with you. Because that's what...
Hey, sorry for the listeners, we just had a bit of a technical issue, but so auditing a company, you're looking for... Obviously, you put those tools in place, you said, and then you kind of, the next step was from there was, what was that again, Josh? Sorry?
Yeah, so I guess the next step there is really identifying where the opportunities are, whether it be in the R&D or the government grant space, and how we can maximise them for the clients. And I guess also coming up with a bit of a strategy in terms of, you know, what does that look like, not only, you know, over that 3-6 week initial engagement period, but, you know, sort of the next 12, 24 months, and, you know, is it going to be an ongoing and growing R&D program?
And do you think it's important for everyone to do R&D? Like, obviously some businesses, it's their whole entire, you know, product innovation is like their company, right? But, you know, for someone like I mentioned before about dietetics, or, you know, like a bakery, or, you know, is it necessarily important for them to do, I guess, a bit of R&D on the side or as part of their company?
I guess my answer probably should be, if every company is doing a big thing, but I think we've got to have a reason for doing it as well. It can't just be based on, you know, just because it's there doesn't mean you should be doing it. I think you've generally got to have that passion, that interest in trying to, you know, invent or try something new. It might be development of a new product or a new process, but I think you've got to firstly probably be at that level of interest where you're ready to do that. And also ready to be, you know, to fail in that as well, because often a lot of the time with R&D, it's all about all the failings and learning along the way to create something that no one else has.
Yeah, you did mention that, say, for example, in your manufacturing part that you were talking about before, had a lot of people who didn't accept the eligibility criteria. Have you seen a lot of failures, or you've had to, unfortunately, you know, experience the phone calls of saying, hey, we weren't successful, like, or... this person got it or whatever. Is that a big part of the process of letting that businesses know?
It is. It's generally, we sort of have, so we've probably got a bit of a different approach. We generally won't put forward a client for, say, a government grant unless we think they have a really good, like, strong chance of getting it. So often, I mean, I haven't had to have those phone calls too often. I would often prefer to have that phone call at the start and tell them, look, even though they might think they fit in that category, we don't think you've generally got a great chance of getting it. And look, some clients say, well, look, we're still happy to pay you for the, you know, chance to do it. At the end of the day, you've got to be in it to win it. But yeah, I would prefer to tell people up front if we didn't think after having that initial call that, you know, look, it's probably not right for you.
Yeah, and that's really good process as well. Like I've got here saying in my little dialogue to ask about, you know, you've got an eligibility test for your type of services that you have, you know, at the front of the website. And I've kind of got the question of, you know, why would you not rather have everyone come knocking to your door? But obviously you've got your plate super full anyhow. If people can't, you know, get the green light and they're too small or, you know, not large or too large, they might not be, you know, acceptable for your services, as well as, you know, they might not be eligible for a grant. So I guess saving that time for them as well as yourself is important.
Yeah, and I think the main reason we put that on as well is just to kind of, I guess, filter through, you know, those people. I think, you know, people are generally at different stages of R&D. They're either at the very early stages of looking to do something and they want to learn more about, you know, well, if I go out and spend, you know, $100,000, how much am I realistically going to get back? You've got the other ones that are, I guess, probably in the middle of doing, you know, a project, and they want to learn a little bit more or be prepared to, you know, ready to claim. And then you've got the ones who have just finished and go, yep, we want to put in the claim tomorrow. Let's go with this. So the test on there, I guess, gives them a bit of an indication, you know, based on the current legislation and criteria of who's eligible. And then, you know, we've built out the calculator on our website a bit as well, just to give a bit of an indication, you know, of really what the net figure could look like for you. Quite a bit of a numbers man myself, so that was sort of a personal thing I wanted to see in the industry, just to be able to easily calculate what that figure might look like.
Yeah, I remember when I was going through this process and I was looking at a few numbers and I'd see a few documents and go, all right, that's too many zeros for me, and I just closed the page straight away, just because I think it's important for people to know what's up at stake and what costs are as well, because you know, if you've only got enough to get next week's groceries, there's no point jumping in and throwing a grant. You probably need to, obviously it's important if you got that grant, it'd be great, but you probably need to focus on, you know, getting the product a bit more, or the service a bit more established before going down that process.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so that's what kind of, I would say, moves on to, I guess, those monthly meetings that you have. That'd be really important for people who haven't, I guess, juggled with those extra zeros in their, you know, in their bank account. You guys come along and say, "All right, we can't just go start buying coffees to everyone. Let's, you know, use this smart." Is that what happens in those meetings?
Yeah, generally, the reason so I guess the advantage I had of being on the other side of the fence, you know, being the general manager of R&D, where we often worked with consultants like myself now, we were trying to identify a gap in the market. And, you know, even after consultation with Oz Industry and the ATO on what they want to see an improvement of, you know, in the R&D industry, it was that companies don't regularly document and keep track of what they're doing. The stigma is, you know, at the 1st of July, everyone sort of goes back once a year for the last 12 months and trying to look at what they can claim. And we know for a fact it's something that the ATO is cracking down on, and rightly so, I think. You know, they're really wanting to see companies invest in, you know, having that regular catch-up and summary process of their R&D programs, and not just wait until the end of the year when that's done. The benefit we see in that is you generally add a track and you end up claiming more expenses because things don't go missing. It's pretty hard to go back, you know, 12 months for anyone's memory and try and remember exactly what you did on that day, you know, 12 months ago. So we find generally you end up claiming a little bit more as well, and you actually have an indication throughout the year of what you're spending and what you're looking at getting back. So we try and forecast that out for our clients. So, you know, we might do a end of July process and be able to spit out a figure that says, hey, this is what has been spent in R&D, and this is, you know, realistically what we've already looking at getting back for this month.
Yeah, and it probably helps people find an extra bloody couple of $1,000 that they forgot about, or
Exactly right. Or it also gives them the confidence to continue, either investing, or it might be that decision between hiring a new employee or not. And having that confidence, knowing that all this is, an estimate of what we're looking at getting back, it can really help.
And that, I guess, comes to, people looking at their own product and looking at their own, how much they are spending on things, The process of IP, I'm not sure if I must have read it somewhere on your website or maybe even just thought of it, but like, is it important? We did mention that about, coming to someone like Prompt with your own ideas. How important is it for people to build, their IP correctly, not just have, a website with the .com that they run through Wix or Squarespace?
Yeah. No, it's a great, it's a good question. It's probably another thing we identified, that another gap in the market. Generally, what I found with these processes was the companies were relying on generally one person within the entity to do the R&D or to manage it all. What we found then, if that person had left, generally they were the ones that had all the IP, because it was all, in their head, basically. It wasn't properly documented. So when it came down to going, okay, what have we done in the last 12 months? Generally it was, well, those two or three people have left the company now, so we don't know. That's a pretty hard conversation to have with someone when you say, well, realistically, we can't put together a claim if we don't have that knowledge or that technical expertise. So that was one of the other reasons we kind of developed the monthly model, because we found that, regardless of whether that that employee, leaves, or that group of employee leaves the company, we've got it documented as an external contractor to the company. So it's a good fail-safe measure to have as well. And, I think once you take a product from the R&D process to commercializing it, and, all of a sudden you're looking at lodging patents and trademarks, having that IP and that knowledge area is crucial for being successful in any application with a patent or a trademark.
It's a it's a difficult area, the IP stuff. And you mentioned that, when people disappear, or, they crack the shits and they leave, and they, this is mine type of thing, let's take out the O, because, yeah. And all of a sudden you've had to change the name of your company or whatever, or, and then you've lost all that, customer understanding of who you are, because now you've gone and changed all the letters in your name or whatever. But, I think that's a great area for people to understand, and because people are very, innovative these days and creative, and they have these ideas, but if they get caught, in the wrong crowd, they can end up in some trouble. And I can't imagine that conversation you must have with those people when you say, we can't, us as a company can't as well, for our, credibility, lodge this, claim, because it's not truthful and it's not this, you guys have look out for yourselves as well,
Yeah, and, yeah, I guess the thing is, we always find is, people think, oh, it would never happen to me, I've got a great team around me. But that's always the case with everyone that it happens to. We find it's always that, prevention, just having the right processes in place to avoid it from happening, and, just de-risking yourself.
We're going to go a bit backwards now. But before I do that, is there anything else you want to talk about, in terms of Prompt, or anything we haven't mentioned in terms of your services, or any, words of wisdom for people looking at grants or R&D?
I guess probably the main thing is to, if you do have an idea, or if you're currently working on something, putting in the time to have a little bit to think about it, where it could potentially go, looking at the uniqueness of it, what's unique about your product or your offering in the market. Surrounding yourself with people that will, give you honest feedback on it, whether that be good, bad, or indifferent.
Did you have that experience when you said, oh, hey, I'm going to leave my 4-year job and come into Prompt? Did you have that time to sit back and go, is this realistic for me to do?
It's funny, I think for me it was a matter of, bringing a couple of clients on the side initially first. I think, last year was sort of the year of COVID, where, everyone kind of, I guess probably had that that chance to sit back and, reflect a little bit and go, what am I currently doing? What am I working towards? And, almost hit the reset button. But it was definitely the year for me to do that. And that's where I went, well, you know, I like literally sat down and, you know, just on a white bit of paper and summarized what I think it would look like and what our offering would look like. And, you know, we went to market with that offering and we got it wrong and we modified it and kept adapting and we're still changing it now. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to, you know, putting something out there that you're happy to put your name onto, and then testing with the market and seeing if, you know, what the response is like. I think until you give it a shot, you're really not gonna know, and you know, you get feedback and then you improve and you adapt and you grow. So we generally think we're, you know, we're at a good stage where we're, you know, generally about to grow and go through hopefully some serious growth. But that hasn't come without, you know, fine tuning and getting it right for the customer.
Yeah, you did mention you were very, you know, it's exciting to, you know, branch out to a bigger office but you know, throw out some job advertisements as well, unless you already have people in mind. But you know, you're in that, like you said, the stage of prompt, you know, it's a startup, it's going through growth, you're going to branch out, you know, how do you feel? I'd imagine you'd feel proud and, you know, happy from where you are, and, you know, how's it all going?
Yeah, I think probably the two words are probably daunting and exciting at the same time. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to be bringing on a team where you're responsible for, you know, making sure they get paid every week. So you want to make sure that you're going to have a business that's going to continue to grow and develop. I think we've sort of well and truly proven that now, you know, even with the feedback we're getting from our clients, probably just on the uniqueness of the service. You know, we sort of treat them like, you know, I guess like their family, and, you know, we just want the best outcome for them. Yeah, I'm excited to be growing a team, you know, around that and around, you know, that same vision in wanting to help our clients like that and genuinely seeing them grow and develop.
And what you did mention that you were a bit more of a team player. What type of things are you looking for to, you know, are you looking for another Josh, or are you looking for, you know, for someone similar to yourself?
It's funny, I'm probably looking for someone the exact opposite of me. I think it's easy to, and, you know, I've sort of been through this process before hiring people in the past, you know, being a manager of other companies, and you tend to gravitate towards people you get along with, you know, really well and really easily. But I think sometimes what you need to do is it's almost like the classic skill matrix where, you know, you note down all your skills and then try and find the gaps in them, and where you're either missing out on those skills and experience. So that's definitely been a process, and that's where I think we'll be focusing on, you know, someone who doesn't have, or the skills and experience that I have in other areas that I can look to bring on and grow and develop. At the end of the day, we also want to increase, I guess, the range of services and expertise we can give to our clients. You know, sometimes that might involve, you know, being able to give them advice in a specific area. So, yeah, being able to bring those people along for the ride and the journey would be great.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. That's great. Now, I do speak to, and I did probably mention this at the start as well, you know, I guess the crazy world of being in a startup and, you know, being in charge, and it's quite fast-paced. I have spoken to a few startup entrepreneurs, like, on this podcast. So how do you find that part of being, you know, compared to being the person who goes to the office and does someone's job and gets a paycheck, and then now you've moved to more of a, you know, it's all a new type of, I guess, scenario. How do you find that?
I generally love it, and I love the excitement and probably the thrills of it all. And like I said, it definitely can be daunting at times because the other day the work and the responsibility is on you to be able to, you know, to bring that to the table and to execute and deliver. I generally like the idea that, you know, the potential of this is really up to me and myself driving it. So that knowing that in itself and the possibilities, that just sort of fuels me every day.
That's awesome. And so my very last question here, Josh, and I ask this to all my guests, is it's, you know, what's an ideal day for Joshua Loomley? So basically, my friend Aaron, he, you know, skiing in the morning, snowboarding in the afternoon, then went surfing and like, it was just, it could be anywhere in the world. Like, what would it look like? It doesn't have to involve work. Some people's answers does involve them sitting at the desk all day because they just love doing it. But what, you know, where would you be? What would you be eating? Who would you be with? What would it look like?
Okay, so this is not specific to what does a normal work day look like?
Yeah, inside outside of prompt, definitely not an ideal work day of how productive you can be, but more about yourself outside of work life.
It's funny. I think even holidaying for me isn't always holidaying. Like I think I could sit around a pool at a resort for maybe a few hours at the most before I need to get the laptop out and generally just do something, even if it's just reading an article. My ideal day is probably almost half doing a bit of work, being able to work with a team that I can grow and that are passionate as I am about this, and helping them achieve goals in their career, but also being able to walk out of the office on say a 12 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and go out on the jet ski, going around the Gold Coast or, even just doing anything like that, anything on the water. That's really an ideal day for me. I think when we eventually get to get back up and running and traveling and borders open, being able to do, a bit of this remotely as well, and travel at the same time, that's a huge passion. I think, everyone can say that they want to travel. But I think being able to do that and work at the same time and have that flexibility, probably for the first time ever since I've been working my career, that's definitely something that I'm looking forward to as well.
That's amazing to hear. And I think that's, I've touched on it, and I talk about it and think about it a lot where I think, once this is all over, depending the timeline, whatever, if it does ever end, I think that'll be one of the major things that increases will be people working remotely. Not from home, no, they'll be anywhere, they'll just clock in for their X amount of hours, or they'll be very flexible with they answer emails whenever, and they get their tasks done, send it to their boss, or send it to wherever it needs to go, and, it's more, instead of time management, it's more of a task management, where you get the tasks done, and you move on, and then you go have beers, on the beach in Italy, and then you wake up, and, you're doing your emails at the airport, or whatever, it'd be very, flexible, and I think that's the word you used as well. And great to hear you're going to getting outside and getting on the water. I know the startup world can be stuck at the desk all day, so that's cool. And so, do you have your own jet ski or a boat or fishing? Or
yeah, no, we do. So it's got a jet ski, but I think the next thing will definitely be looking at a boat or something a bit bigger where we can take some people on. So that's sort of the dream, but you got to get the work done before you get there.
Yeah, the prompt tinny. I can't wait to see it. That's great.
maybe we'll start off with the tinny.
Thanks so much for coming on this afternoon, Josh. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed talking to, and actually just sitting and listening and learning about this type of area, because for someone who's, had a glance at some of these things and thinking back and going, not having an idea, now to knowing someone who, if I ever have another idea again, which I'm sure I will, it's very, very innovative in a PhD area, will be able to give you a call. So that's great.
Yeah, no, thank you for having us. And I guess, for your listeners, if anyone's ever not sure or, we understand how complex this area can be. I mean, just feel free to, jump on our website and send us an inquiry or, give us a call, and happy to have a little bit of a chat further about it.
Yeah, we'll put the website link in the description of the episode. So if you've got it for lies, those guys listening and girls, look, have a scroll down there and click on the prompts website and have a look at talks about Josh and talks about the process, and I guess it kind of explains it. Well, I definitely thought we'd explain a bit more in detail today, but it does have some good insight there. So check that out. But thanks again, Josh. We'll throw our cameras on now, and then I'll just catch you before we go. But too easy. Thanks for that. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you.
To finish off, as always, thanks for listening. I really do appreciate it, as this is a passion of mine. Don't forget to leave a review. It helps other people find the show. And please share this episode on your social media or tell a friend to continue spreading the message of Cook and Goals. You can sign up to our weekly email by clicking the link in the description of this episode and follow our Instagram @thecookscommunity. Until next time, remember to breathe.